This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth-shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Bob's not here. Let's get that out of the way early. We need to get used to this. He's not here on Tuesdays. Everybody over it? I miss him. Don't get me wrong.
I do too. I think the populace knows that he's not here on Tuesday.
The populace?
The populace knows.
I think they do. Limits and I are both coming off emotional evenings. I stayed up late watching the Golden State Warriors and Jimmy Butler somehow win that game. And then I watched the whole game over again.
Wow.
And was up till 3 a.m. I'm cranky. I'm happy. I'm sad. I'm depressed.
So you've
I'm anxious. I'm elated. And I'm filled with coffee.
You're five cups of coffee in, I'm assuming, at this point.
And you told me that you cried last night over a television
show. Well, I didn't cry, but there was probably a little bit of a teary-eyed moment.
That's crying.
Yeah, depends on how you describe it.
It's not weeping. What happened?
So I am a huge fan of the NCIS franchise.
Yeah.
I might sound like I'm like 45 or like 70, I don't know. But growing up, I always watched the show with my dad, and we still watch it. And NCIS had its pre-season finale episode, and the NCIS Origins, which is the show that leads into NCIS, it's the prequel, had a huge cliffhanger at the very end that puts one of the best characters on the show into a significant danger. I don't want to spoil it if anybody's watching it and hasn't watched it yet.
I thought this show was over like 20 years ago. It's still live?
They're like 21 seasons in, and they just did a prequel. They just did a brand new show from their main star of the show, Gibbs, what his life was like 20
Ashton
years.
Ashton Gibbs stars in
yes,
this?
Yes, prior to what his life was like before the star of the show, like 10, 15 years before. So they did a prequel, and the prequel is probably my new favorite show.
Well, I want to watch it now.
It's really, really good.
Beginning.
It's really good.
And somebody's dead?
We don't know yet.
But you cried over that possibility.
I was sad, yes.
Was your dad sad as well?
So my dad...
Were you watching together?
My dad went to bed before the prequel show, before the second show, because it comes on at 10 o'clock. They're at 9 and 10 o'clock.
The togetherness of your family is what makes me just weep for joy for you folks.
You all
went to the Jimmy Buffett concert together years ago.
Yes.
You played in rock boxes together, and now NCIS bonds the family.
Oh, NCIS, Chicago PD, old episodes of Person of Interest, every Steelers game. Yeah, we watch a lot.
So you like, there's a theme there. You like the detective type of show.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Have you ever gone old school for Ironside or the Rockford Files?
No.
Things like that.
No.
Charlie's Angels?
What was the show... Something Blues that was filmed here.
Hill Street Blues.
Yeah. My dad and I have watched a little bit of that.
Yeah, great show.
He really likes that show.
How about the movie Charlie's Angels? Have you watched that?
I have honestly not.
You should.
Now, I know it's
one of the most
popular movies that have ever been created.
Yes,
But no, I haven't seen it. Huge cliffhangers. And then I'm going to have to see what the Chicago PD cliffhanger is going to be on Wednesday.
I bet the whole family can't wait. I want to come over and watch with you guys. I imagine us all in blankets crying at the end of these shows. Is that what happens?
It depends on what the ending is like.
Did you watch the show Lost? Remember
Lost?
That show?
No, I did not. I'm familiar with what it is, but
I'm still emotionally damaged from that show. I don't even know what happened either. I couldn't tell at the end. That always happens to me. Whether it's a movie or a show, seems like everybody gets it at the end except me. I still don't know what happened. It's like a joke.
Were they found on Lost? Was there a solution?
I don't know. It's like jokes. For some reason, I'm always the last person to get a given joke. Did you know that?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. But sometimes you just don't want to point it out.
See if you get this joke upon first telling.
Sure.
Something's very wrong with me today, Limits. I feel in a different state of mind between the fatigue. I played horrible golf yesterday with Mike White from the Post-Gazette, not to be confused with the quarterback from the Jets,
yes,
or wherever he is now. Horse walks into a bar. No, I'm sorry. Skeleton walks into a bar. What does he say to the bartender?
I'm dead.
I'll have a beer and a mop. Did you get it?
No.
See, that's something that we share. He's a skeleton, Limit. So if he drinks the beer, it's going to go all over the floor.
So that's why he needs the mop.
Yes.
I get it now.
Yeah.
It's never good when you have to explain the joke. Maybe Ron would have liked it.
Hold on. What's the worst part of that interaction? That it occurred. B, B, that it was a horrible joke. C, that you didn't get it.
Probably.
I think it's C, actually.
It's C, yeah, that I didn't get it.
Yes.
Text line very conflicted on my viewing habits.
Yeah.
Some people wanted me to watch the show House. Somebody else saying, great show, love it, for NCIS. Someone else ripping me because I watched the show and also think Drew Aller is a good quarterback. So, yes, we're throwing darts early. We're throwing Jackson darts early.
Jackson darts. I don't get the whole Jackson dart thing. Okay, now I'm going to go off on a tangent. And this is your fault that I'm going off on this tangent.
Yes,
because
it is.
I came to praise Kyle Dubas today. Is what I'm going to do at the top, except for this, if I can find the question this guy asked me in my intergalactically read Post-Gazette mailbag.
Did you see one of the questions that was asked in the mailbag?
No.
By one Charlie Borges.
Yeah, I did. Charlie, who works here, you may know him as Nelly. You may know him as Gorgeous Borges. He asked me about his wedding. Any advice on the planning? To which I said, first of all, on the wedding itself, this reminds me of when Beano Cook gave me an unsolicited three-word piece of advice before I got married, and it was, don't do it. Hmm. But I don't want to put some sort of a pall over Nelly's wedding, so I'm not gonna say that. Plus, that wouldn't be hopeful, and I hope he does do it. I think saying yes is easier than saying no.
Aren't you happy in your marriage? Aren't you happy you went through with it?
Yeah.
So why would... Well, I guess everybody has different experiences. That was Beano Cook's advice.
Yeah, you'd have to ask Beano about his piece of advice. But that reminded me. The idea of someone asking me for advice reminded me of Beano Cook. My advice to Nelly was, let your bride do whatever she wants. It's her day. It's good advice, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about anything.
Almost anything.
Almost anything.
You'll learn limits.
Do you think that you'll be invited to Charlie's wedding?
No. But that's okay. So this guy asks me, because I've made reference many times to Ben being very high on Jackson Dart. So Z-Dub-Z, he calls himself, why should we hold Ben's analysis of Dart so high when we all know he at most watched one YouTube highlight of him? You can imagine this elicited some emotion in me, right?
A little bit.
And he should know, little Z-Dub-Z, that the guy with the pen, or in this case the computer, always gets the last word. Would you like to know what I told him?
I would.
Yes, you would. Oh, I don't know, Z, because he's one of the 10 greatest quarterbacks in NFL history and probably knows a little something about playing the position. You have no idea how much he watched Dart, incidentally, Dr. Z, but if it was only for 5 seconds, he'd still have something valuable to say. And while we're on the topic, if the amount of tape a person watches is your measuring stick for opinion integrity, Dan Orlovsky lives in the film room and he loves Dart. I wish we had the clip of him, Limits. Jack Ham was a pretty good player. He saw Dart play in person. He loves him. So does Brian Daboll, obviously, and he helped to develop Jalen Hurts and Josh Allen. Not that he's faring very well as a head coach, but he was saddled with Daniel Jones. Kirk Herbstreit. Last I checked, watches a lot of college football. He's also a big fan of Dart. And Ryan Clark, who studied quarterbacks for a living when he played in the NFL, said he thought the Giants, quote, knocked it out of the park in the first round. None of which guarantees anything, but let's not act as if Ben or I or anyone else has lost their minds here. Thank you, Limits. Not to mention, I looked at this guy's timeline and he endorsed someone saying early in the season that Justin Fields was the Steelers' best offensive player. So what do you know about quarterbacks, Dr. Z? Right, Limits?
Yeah, Mr. Z can take some Z's and no longer comment on this, you're saying.
I don't understand why there's not more of a conversation. The conversation from the beginning, nationally on the broadcast and everywhere else, was simply about why didn't the Steelers take Shador with the 21st pick. And I guess that's because there was some belief that Tomlin was enamored with him, when in fact, all the evidence suggests the opposite. Somebody else asked me here, why do you think the Steelers didn't take Shador? I said, why do you think? Because Tomlin didn't want him to be the face of the franchise, didn't identify him as the future quarterback here. It's very simple. If he did, he would be a Steeler right now. It's that simple. Mike Tomlin wields more power than maybe any coach in professional sports. He's the fifth highest paid. What he wants, he gets. He didn't want Shador Sanders. And what I said the day that he had the quotes about Sanders is what Donnie sort of said the other day on Twitter. The day those quotes came out, where Tomlin was effusive in his praise about toughness and competitive spirit from Shador, and they don't get talked about enough, which, when you think about it, if Dion's doing the talking, I think it gets talked about enough. But as Dulac said, Tomlin had never in 18 years gone out of his way to talk about, praise a draft prospect like that. And my feeling, as soon as it happened, and you can go back and verify it, oh, limitless wonder, was that Tomlin was doing his old friend Dion a solid by putting out there something that could potentially combat the negative storylines that were already out there. So Mike Tomlin, who carries a lot of clout in the NFL, wanted it out there.
It's fair.
Some think as a smokescreen. I don't, but he wanted it out there either way, that he thinks a lot of Shador Sanders, a lot, and it doesn't, quote, get talked about enough. I think he was doing a favor to his friend Dion there, or trying to, and trying to combat some of the negative storylines. But back to my original point, which I'm now forgetting what it was Jackson Dart. There was almost zero talk of it that night. Like, in some circles, he's not taken seriously. It wasn't taken seriously that he was a possibility there. The Steelers, according to Dulac, had a first-round grade on him. I've given you the list of people who back Jackson Dart, and I'm perfectly willing to sit here and say, obviously, he might not pan out. He might be a bust. But let's not act like there isn't a wide range of extremely credible people who would have been praising the Steelers for taking Jackson Dart at 21. And yet it feels like it never became a topic.
Because Mike Tomlin did not feel the same way as those guys. And Omar Khan and Art Rooney did not feel the same way as Jack
right,
Ham
but the
and
top,
Ben.
Right, but the topic would be, did the Steelers just pass up Jackson Dart? And it was hardly mentioned. They passed up Sanders, but nobody talked about Dart. Even when Brian Daboll, and say what you want about Daboll's head coaching candidacy, a guy who helped develop Tua, who helped develop Jalen Hurts, they won a national championship with him as the offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach at Alabama, went to Buffalo and helped develop Josh Allen, who was a very raw project, I might add, and who gives Daboll a lot of credit. He has credibility with quarterbacks. It ain't his fault he inherited Daniel Jones in New York. He, with his future on the line here, maybe very soon, maybe even sooner than he can or should play Dart, traded back into the first round and took Jackson Dart. That's an eye-opener to me. And yet, Dart is just so summarily dismissed in so many quarters that it blows my mind how that wasn't more of a topic. It really does. Anywho.
I wonder if like the Giants didn't trade up for Dart. And one funny thing that I think got left out of the whole equation is it was either the GM or the owner's son that posted on his Instagram story Jackson Dart highlights. It was like a huge Jackson Dart highlight video that he posted. And then immediately ended up getting taken down. He made his account private, basically saying, like, this is what the Giants are doing. If the Giants were so set, because we knew they were going to take a quarterback, on Dart and having to move up for him, maybe they thought just a panic mode, whatever. I wonder if Dart would have been a second-round pick. He would not have had a similar slot to Sanders. But I wonder where he would have ultimately got drafted if it wasn't the Giants being so aggressive for him.
All great topics of conversation. Why didn't we have it? Why wasn't it nationally talked about? It just wasn't. It's because the whole Shador thing was the sexy topic.
He's so polarizing.
That's why, yeah, that's why that happened.
And it's Dion, and it's quarterback with his jersey number retired to Colorado already, playing with the Heisman Trophy winner. I mean, he's just polarizing figures get talked about more than they should sometimes.
Man, it's fascinating, though. I mean, it is fascinating, the Cleveland situation compared to the Steelers and how this will play out. Is Shador going to be a good quarterback? Should the Steelers have taken him? Is Kenny Pickett freed of the Matt Canada handcuffs? Is he actually going to become good? I don't think so. I don't think Kenny Pickett will be good, but man, it's hard. It's going to be hard not to monitor those situations compared to the Steelers quarterback situation moving forward. Somebody asked me, what are the Browns doing? I said, what are the Browns doing? That's an age old question, sir. I have no idea what they're doing. When it happened on Saturday and I got called into the fray Saturday, did you hear about that, Limits?
For Starkfest, I did hear about that.
Yeah, that we had a Starkfest on Saturday here. And the Steelers made a pick live and Shador got picked live on Starkfest.
I went back and listened to your show, Joe, because I was up at Penn State covering the spring game. And I see Joel Nelson tweet out the rundown, and it said Joe Starkey. And I was like, oh, how about this?
It was incrinculent, some would say.
Yes.
And, while we were doing that, Shador got drafted. And immediately I noticed, oh, my God, look at the video of the draft room with Stefanski and Andrew Berry clapping as if in a hostage video. Somebody tweeted out immediately, and it went all over social media, like that video. Yeah, it was a golf clap. Blink if you need help for both those guys.
Yeah, they needed help. Blink twice, please.
Did you do your homework and find out if any team ever has taken a quarterback in the third and fifth rounds of the NFL draft?
You're
the beat writer.
Not that I found, Jerry. I did not find anything that said so.
So I told this guy, I have no idea what they're doing, but you tell me when the last time an NFL team took a third and fifth round quarterback. I will promise you it hasn't happened more than four or five times in the history of the league. And if somebody said it never happened, at least in modern NFL, I mean, I don't know what happened in 1950 or 1930 when the Steelers drafted William Shakespeare. Did you know their first ever draft pick was William Shakespeare?
That's right. Yeah, he wrote a really good story for them on why he should be the first pick.
Did you read my story on William Shakespeare a few years ago?
No.
You should.
I know.
I'll send it to you.
Did you see the Browns decline the fifth-year option on Kenny Pickett?
Yes! Did you see they signed Wrong Way Deontay?
Yes, they did.
As we speak, he's driving his car backwards to Cleveland.
Pickett to Deontay is going to be, Bernie Kosar to fill in the blank.
What's the best connection there? Oh, my God, I didn't think of that. It's going to be Pickett to Deontay.
Pickett to Deontay, yes.
They always had a good connection. A lot of telepathy going on there.
It wasn't Pickens to Pickett. It wasn't Pickett to Pickens as Montana to Rice, but it's close. It's close.
He gets in a shot at Pony.
No, all friendly banter.
Oh, we'll see about that later.
Yeah, I'm sure Pony will take a shot right back.
When he comes firing back. On the other hand, as much as we make fun of the Browns, they have won a playoff game in the past 8 years, and they've been competitive in two playoff games, which is two more than the Steelers have been competitive in since the 2016 season. As you and I concluded yesterday, Limits, if somebody's first conscious memory is at the age of 5 or 6, then we have kids going into high school right now who literally have no conscious memory of the Pittsburgh Steelers even being competitive in a playoff game. I feel horrible for those children. You?
Disastrous. I feel really sad for them. And imagine growing up in this current climate where the Penguins are changing coaches and haven't won a playoff series since 2018.
Yeah.
Everything with the Steelers and the Pirates haven't been in the playoffs since 2015. I mean, does that what does that do for a generation, people in the next 10, 15 years that are growing up, the fan base? I wonder.
Well, I feel bad for everybody in that case, but I'm looking up something right now, so I'm distracted. There was something that happened, and the Beeswhacker was on the scene. Colin Beasley?
Yes.
From the Post-Gazette, who's rapidly becoming a legend. Is he a worthy successor to Destiny's Child?
I think the jury's still out, but he's doing a really good job so far.
Was it Saturday night where Shelty's bullpen decisions were highly questionable?
Yes. Colin Holderman came into the game in the eighth inning, fresh off the IL, in a very close game that the Pirates had a chance to win, and Colin Holderman did what has now become Colin Holderman things.
What did Shelty say that night? There was a night where Shelty said, "I don't know" on something. Can you look that up? I can't find it. And I was reminded of it this morning, and it blew my mind reading it. There was a situation in the game where he literally said, "Yeah, I don't know. And it's something that he should have known as the manager. In the meantime, Limits, we've come full circle with going to kids going into high school with no conscious memory of the Steelers being competitive in a playoff game. That brings me to Kyle Dubas and Art the Second and Mike Tomlin and Mike Sullivan. And I come here in praise of Kyle Dubas today because I believe it was his call, not Fenway Sports Group. I believe it was his call to fire Mike Sullivan. And we can quibble over the wording, but Mike Sullivan was pushed out. And Kyle Dubas spoke truths that were translatable or should be to the Steelers. I would feel thrilled for Mike Tomlin if he could get out of this situation that he helped create and go on the open market and get a new lease on life and get even richer and have your pick of teams. And it's too late now. The Bears presented the perfect opportunity for the Steelers to at least explore this. The Penguins have done it. They've done it. And it's a mutually beneficial thing. Mike Sullivan is freed of this mess that he helped create. And now he's out there. He's the toast of the NHL.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Tomlin could be the same. It feels over. It feels like the Ravens game was absolute rock bottom. It just had that feeling, and Dubas spoke the truth about this. I really liked some of the things he said yesterday about reasons for moving on, about how Sullivan's still a good coach, about how unusual, if not unprecedented, it would be for a coach in any organization, and I'll extend it to any sport, to have great success early, to sort of flatline, to be there forever, to go through a long playoff drought, like not a couple years, like long playoff drought, going on a decade playoff drought, have the organization go through major changes, and then come out on the other side and still be the guy? And lead them back to glory? It just doesn't happen that way. Let's hear from Dubas on why he decided it was best to move on from Mike Sullivan. And man, I wish we could hear from Mike Sullivan. I was thinking about Ron today. Ron would absolutely have a Sully column today. He's got Sully's number. He would call Sully after every season for the Ron and Sully column.
Really?
Yeah. By the way, I'm amazed at some of the things I'm reading and hearing about this situation. Less than 10 days ago, we had people in this town writing and saying that that keeping Sullivan was the right move. The Penguins should keep him. And now today they're saying the Penguins made the right move by getting rid of him. Well, what the hell happened in 10 days that changed your mind? I don't know. And then we have the same people who reported that after the season, Mike Sullivan's not going anywhere. You can wish it. The Rangers can wish it. He's not going anywhere. And now they're refuting the Crowley-Dickerson report that Sullivan went to the Penguins with a list of demands. Okay. Well, what is happening here? Whatever the Penguins do is right. There was no strife between Dumas and Sullivan. I mean, my God. I know that teams cover themselves this day and age, but let's leave that to the Penguins. Okay? Let them cover themselves in the most positive of lights. Okay? That's City Hall covering City Hall. Every team does it. That doesn't mean everybody has to. Anyhow, where was I? Oh, in praise of Dubas. For once. Yes. I can't remember praising him probably since the Carlson trade happened. And he turned out to be dead wrong on that. But, hey, at the time it seemed like a good move. Let's hear Dubas yesterday on either one of those things, Limits. Either how sometimes over time it gets stale, but the guy's still a good coach. And then the idea of staying with an organization forever through severe downs and coming out on the other side just doesn't happen. Either one.
First, two things truly can be true.
I think that two things can be true, that someone can be a great head coach and that they'll move on to become a great head coach on their next stop. And it could also be time for change here. And I think that is that was the conclusion that I'd come to. It'd been something on my mind during the season, but I have great respect for Sully.
That's it. That's all we needed. From Dubas's mouth to Art's ears. As we mentioned yesterday at the top of the show, the greatest hockey coach in history moved on under different circumstances each time, mutually, you know, they wanted to move on, he wanted to move on, whatever, from three different places. Scotty Bowman from Montreal, from Buffalo, from Pittsburgh, and then he went on to have amazing success in Detroit. Sometimes it's just time. It's past time, actually. It was past time for Sully. But at least they finally saw it. And I think that's the question, 29 minutes later, that I wanted to open with today, which is why was and is Art so afraid to make the obvious move from after that Baltimore game, which was to move on? You do it in such a way that's you know, you make it sound mutual, all of that. The Bears gave you the perfect opportunity, and I realized Tomlin had a no-trade clause, but once you go to a guy and start asking him, hey, any thoughts about that, then he realizes, well, they don't want me here anymore, which is fine. And for Mike Tomlin, it would be awesome. The example he would look to is Mike Sullivan. And nationally, this is being viewed that way, which is interesting. And I got asked about this today, too. Like, why in the Penguins situation with Mike Sullivan is all of North America looking at this and saying, yeah, this seems about right? Penguins move on and Sully highly coveted. Everybody wins. Whereas if the Steelers moved on from Tomlin, it would be some sort of outrage. That's the way it feels. Why couldn't the national media look upon that if it happened as, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, A, the Steelers haven't been competitive in a playoff game since 2016. B, during their six-game losing streak, they've been outscored 73-0 in the first quarter. Other than that, they were meticulously well prepared for every game. C, they absolutely hit bottom in that Ravens game where Kirk Herbstreit accused them of quitting on Tomlin. And D, and perhaps this is the most damning or the best argument, is they have just settled into this place of high-end mediocrity. And that's reflected in their record in the last 4 years. I think people think the record is way better than it is. But if you include the playoff debacles, and I want everybody to hear this, in the last 4 years, which is also a long time in the NFL, the Steelers are 38-32-1 and have been outscored by 80 points. That's a four-year stretch where they're 38-32-1, haven't come close to winning a playoff game, and have a negative point differential of 80 points. Think about that for a second. And, you know, there's this idea, too, espoused by many. Well, a lot of teams in the NFL would like to be doing what the Steelers are doing. They would sign in blood for that. To which I say, even an incompetent boob like Woody Johnson, if you went up to him with the Jets and said, Woody, you sign here in blood. For the next 8 years, you're going to make the playoffs, five of those 8 years, and get blown out of every game in the first round. So over the next 8 years, nearly a decade, you will never win a playoff game. You'll never come close to winning a playoff game, but you will at least sneak into the first round for the most part, five of those 8 years. You think he signs in blood for that? I don't think the Jets, the Cardinals, the Giants, who, by the way, have won a playoff game in the last 8 years, any of those teams sign up for that? I'm not so sure about that. That's nobody's plan. That's nobody's long-range plan, is that over the next 8 years, we'll miss the playoffs almost 40% of the time. We'll miss 3 of 8, but we will go 5 of the 8 years and get blown off the field in the first round every time. I'm not sure that's anybody's 8-year plan that they would sign in blood for. But the question becomes, why was and why is Art so afraid? Credit to Kyle Dubas. Let's hear his other quote, Limits.
This is what Dubas had to say about coaches who win with their team, but the further they go, it gets even harder.
From my vantage point here, my full intention when coming into the job was that I thought it was a great opportunity to work with one of, if not the best head coaches in the league, to continue to give the team a chance to contend and then transition it through back to contention. And I think what I've learned in the 2 years is that there's a reason why it's essentially impossible and has not been done, where a coach has led a team to winning and being in contention and through a transition all the way back. There's a number of factors that play in on the relationship side with the players, with the staff, and that make it very difficult to do so.
Bingo. Impossible. I mean, give me an example from any sport where a guy wins big early, sort of levels out, although they still did some winning, some playoff winning, some, and then gets to a point over nearly a decade where it just flatlines, where they don't come close to advancing in the playoffs ever, where the organization goes through major change, and the same coach comes out on the other end of that? Maybe it'll be different here. Maybe Art's patience will pay off, and maybe Tomlin will do that. I ain't seeing it. That was horrible grammar, and I apologize to you for that, Limits. Nobody doubts that Mike Tomlin is a really good football coach. He's a sharp, charismatic leader of men, is what he is. So is Mike Sullivan. And sometimes in the same place, the message gets stale and it's over. And that's okay. In fact, it can be highly beneficial for both parties. 412-928-9370. Off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And the fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. So your thoughts on that? I mean, I guess in some ways it's a moot point now with the Steelers, but That doesn't mean it's not a, it's it, especially when it happens, you know, no longer can we say that the two Mikes are sort of in the same category, that these two teams are in the same category. And you know what? For the first time in a long, long time, I give Kyle Dubas a ton of credit for what he did. And you know what? I bet Mike Sullivan today is feeling an unbelievable sense of freedom. Of course, it's hard to leave, but sometimes it's best to leave. Sometimes the worst thing is to stay together for the kids. Mike Sullivan is sitting, I bet he's smoking a big cigar. He said his goodbyes, I bet, to the people he wants to say goodbye to. And he's smoking a big fat cigar saying, I'm going to be maybe the highest paid coach in the NHL and I get to go pretty much wherever I want. And I think Mike Tomlin would have that same opportunity. It's just hard to leave and hard to tell somebody to go. It is, but it's often the best thing. Credit to Dubas. Limits, it's a reflection of our incredibly short attention spans and our 10-second news cycle that you have people on the texting line. Well, some of them loving the goings-on, others saying move on from Dart and Tomlin. First of all, the Tomlin thing is, how can you look at what the Penguins just did with Mike Sullivan? They did what the Steelers won't. I mean, that's the story. We do have people calling in on that, and then I'm never letting go of the Jackson Dart thing. In fact,
no, please, please, Dart is gone. We missed the board. I was playing darts the other day.
Were you? Are you good at darts?
No, I'm bad.
I throw it like a football, where you're supposed to just sort of
like flick it,
very delicately flick it. I fire it, and that's my problem.
Me too. I throw it literally like I'm playing catch with my buddy throwing the baseball around.
No, I'm never letting go of Jackson Dart. So let's all get used to that right now. I did. My take on that, I found it very interesting that it was only that they passed up Sanders, that nobody was saying they passed up Dart, which he's the better prospect in my mind. Anyway, I found the Shelton thing before we get to the lines. And now I lost it, Limits. What is going on? Here we go. This is a quote from the other night. The Saturday night loss to the Dodgers, right? It felt like a lot of people coming out of that series feeling positive and writing positive things about the Pirates after they lost 800-4 in the second two. So here's the Beeswhacker, who's did great work for the Post-Gazette. With runners on first and third and one out, left fielder Tommy Pham hit a shallow fly ball to Hernandez in right field. Do you remember this, Limits?
Yeah.
Catcher Joey Bart tried to score from third base. Big surprise there with Mike Rebelgo on the case. Right, Limits?
He's sending them. You know it.
Who's your favorite among the Pirates' recent third base coaches? Goey Cora, Mike Rebelgo, or Rick Gofield?
Gofield.
Yeah.
I think Goey Cora is probably my favorite. Go, 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 hurry, run, go.
They're like Jolie when Pomp gets a prank call. No, go ahead. There's no checks here. Head on through. Everybody's in. Just go on ahead. But here's the situation. So Joey Bart tries to score from third. A very poor decision. The Beeswhacker writes, it was unclear if Bart went on his own or if he was sent by third base coach Mike Rebelgo. I added the go. Here's the kicker. And Shelton wasn't sure either. And I quote, Limits, I don't know on that, Shelton said. I don't know what happened. What? Limits! How does he not check on what happened right when it happened and go up and confront people at the top of the dugout, whether it's Rebelgo or Bart, and say, what the blank are you people doing?
Are you surprised? We're talking about the same types of mistakes and bad base running.
Yes,
and
I'm
all
surprised
this for the
he
last
would say,
six years.
I'm surprised he would say, I don't know on that. I don't know what happened. I guess he doesn't want to blame his buddy Rebelgo, right?
I mean, apparently not. Apparently... he just doesn't want to throw anybody under the bus, and it's kind of a common theme like he does with the players. Well, we're just going to treat this in-house. We're not going to talk about it.
And I mean, listen, I suppose there's something admirable about protecting your guy, but you have to realize that when you give a quote like that to the media after a game, when everybody's watching a hot-button issue rear its ugly head, where you have just a lame brain decision at third base or leaving third base. And we've seen plenty of both this year.
They've made the most outs of anybody at third base.
Guys arriving to and leaving from third base. Thank God Rebelgo's not an air traffic controller. My God, people landing and people leaving third base has been a disaster. And the manager of the team says, I don't know on that. I don't know what happened. Well, who would then? Who does know what happened?
Why didn't they ask Mike Rebelgo or ask Joey Bart? Like, why is that not a conversation that's immediately being had? Like, this is a bad comparison, but I'll make it anyway. Like, when you play sports or when I play sports, and even if it's just pickup and something like a awry happens or it's a bad pass, don't you immediately say, like, to your buddy, like, what were you thinking there? Like, what are you doing?
No.
What was the thought process? No,
no, no, I don't.
Our
say
buddies
that.
Do not, that when we play basketball Wednesdays.
In the middle of a pickup game, I would never say that. Somebody makes a bad. What are we going to do? Sit there and discuss it? Limits?
No, it's a 10-second thing. It's over with.
No,
like this could have been
going.
To figure out with Joey Bart.
I think you should have trusted Rebelgo. You should have trusted your instincts that that was a terrible analogy. But that's beside. The
well, it's an analogy that's actually happened before for me, so I thought
he's
I'd give it.
He's the coach of a team.
He should know. Just. By curiosity,
and even if he's
peaking
protecting,
his mind.
Even if he's protecting his guy there, first of all, that guy no longer deserves to be protected. I'm not sure he should still be coaching third base, Mike Rebelgo. But secondly, come on, Shelty. You have to know that when people look at that quote, when you're already under extreme fire here, a key play in the game, I don't know what happened. That's just, come on.
It's because everybody's still reeling from Colin Holderman going in the eighth and blowing it.
I mean, now I'm looking at the columns below here, and people are like, yes. Oh, my God. It's just, it's crazy. This says, this reminded me of the Skeens bobblehead game where Shelton, quote, rested three of his best players. Do you remember that one? That one shall forever live in infamy.
How could you possibly forget? They had to get him off their feet, Joe.
I mean, someone else says getting thrown out at home by three steps and a terrible showing by the bullpen. Someone else says Shelton is either lying that he didn't know if Bart was sent or ran home on his own or should be fired if he really didn't know. I mean, yes. What happened? And your answer was, I don't know. That was the question. I mean, if he, limits. You have to realize when you've been in it this long, if you're a coach, you got to give an answer there.
Yes.
You can't give that answer.
Especially because Shelton knows that, especially in this point in his tenure, everything that he does is being so micromanaged and discussed and criticized. And I'm just surprised that he would not have something ready for that, or just naturally wouldn't curiosity just fill his mind over? Okay, what happened there?
He has said it before. He's like, if Mike, speaking of Rebelgo, if he said he has said that, you know, I think if Mike had that one over, he'd do it over. Or he said about the player, terrible decision. It wasn't like it was just aggressiveness and the guy got thrown out by an inch.
Yeah.
He was out by 7 miles.
Could it be because now he's just gotten so annoyed of Mike Rebelgo and having to answer for him again and again and again that he just doesn't want to do it anymore? Talking about the same things.
I don't know what happened on that, says a man called Garbage Man in quotes. It was the second inning. Did this major league manager think at least once during the next 7 innings to go review the play with his third base coach? Or did he not want to discuss in order not to hurt anyone's feelings? What is going on?
Well, and here's the other thing. They have those tablets in the dugout that they could just immediately look at. Like, even if Shelton didn't want to ask either of the two parties involved here, he could have just looked at the iPad and said, huh, okay, so there was no signal from Rebelgo. And Bart just ultimately made the decision on his own, or he blew through the stop sign.
Does he know now? I mean, don't you have to go back and say what happened with the parties involved and determine, decipher what happened so it doesn't happen again? Well, wait, it's already happened 30 times this year.
That's the problem. They don't fix correctable mistakes that they continually make. They don't.
It's absolutely incrinculant. It's incorrigible. It's incredible. Can you think of an INC word? I already used that one, Jolie. Let's go to the lines to end the hour, mercifully, some would say. And we have Charlie. What's his last name?
Charlie Campbell.
Charlie Campbell. This guy was awesome going into the draft. The most accurate mock drafter in America. I think two of the last four and three of the last 7 years, including last year, he pegged the Steelers' first-round pick, right? Of course,
yes.
A lot of people did. I don't want to overdo that, but he did have it. I think he also had Caleb Johnson.
I did see a mock draft where he did have Caleb Johnson mocked to them, yeah.
He's just very good at what he does. He said he would come on again to analyze the draft. We're going to have him at top of the hour. I can't wait. But we're talking about how the Penguins did what Art has seemingly been so afraid to do, and it's great for everybody. Sully's on top of the world. The Penguins can move on. 412-928-9370. Limits.
All right, let's go to Emmanuel and Carnegie to start us off.
Hello, Emmanuel.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I completely agree with the Penguins. It was time for them to move on. Likewise with the Steelers. I think once you have success early in your career as a coach or a manager, that's the only way you know how to win. And the game has changed both in the NFL and in the NHL. So I feel like they're not able to adapt. They just try to go back to what they know and ways to win. And then last thing I want to say, as of Jackson Dart, I know you're a big fan of Jackson Dart, but you never really told us what you think he could be. Like, what is his comparison?
Comparison, Bo Nix. I have talked about that. And in the best case scenario, Jalen Hurts, a guy who can run around, very athletic, had some of the best running numbers, if not the best of any quarterback, except for Jalen Milroe. In major college football, makes plays on the run, accurate passer, tough as hell. Those would be the comparisons that I and others have made. Next.
All right, let's go to Donovan.
In the best case, I might say, and I'm perfectly willing to admit the worst case is bust, and the second worst case is Andy Dalton, although Andy Dalton did win games. Andy Dalton would be an upgrade on what the Steelers have in their room. Prime Andy Dalton would be better than what the Steelers have right now.
Texter, Limits gets the Surface tablets out at pickup games, but the major league manager won't.
Yeah, what do you do? Call over your pickup basketball teammate and say, look, here, this is what happened on
this
play.
Somebody cut,
you should have been over there. The other guy cut to the hoop. You didn't get him the ball. You could have gotten it to me for a did you call timeouts?
It's a very simple thing. It's like a 5-second thing. Like somebody cuts one way, but you thought they were going the other way. You throw the pass, the ball goes out of bounds. My bad, Tim. I thought you were going that way. It's all good. I read it wrong. Boom, done.
I don't have those conversations usually.
Maybe because we're all friends at pickup basketball.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
You guys have
We've
been
known
together
each other for a long
while.
Time.
Let's go one more.
Here is Donovan in Elwood City.
Hello, Donovan. Are you aware of the musical performer, Donovan?
Yes, I am.
How about Catch the Wind? One of the most underrated songs in the history of pop music, I'd say.
I agree. I want to talk about how if Tomlin didn't have any of Cowher's players when he got that one Super Bowl win. Do you guys think he would have honestly won it on his own?
He won it on his own. You always give credit to people for winning a title. And yes, he did inherit Cowher's players, and he won with them. You know, George Seifert won with Bill Walsh's players. In a large way, Bill Cowher won with some of Chuck Knoll's best players. It just happens that way. You never take credit away from somebody for winning a championship. However, once that group left and the locker room culture they had was gone, that the players created, everything changed. And now we see what's happening with Tomlin has happened with a lot of great coaches. Once you lose your quarterback, where are you? That's happened a lot in the NFL. You know, where did Jimmy Johnson go after Troy Aikman? He had an end stage Dan Marino. It didn't go so well. You know, what happened? I could list many, many other guys who, once the quarterback left, they were basically done. Chuck Knoll, Did they win in the 80s? Chuck Knoll was a great, great coach, but once he didn't have Terry Bradshaw, things change.
Maybe it's because he won back-to-back cups, but nobody's standing here saying Mike Sullivan won with Dan Bousma's players or Mike Johnston's
players.
You know, like,
exactly.
Come on.
I don't buy that one. Here's what I do buy. That the Steelers, for the 8 trillionth time, have not been competitive in a playoff game in nearly a decade. That over the last 4 years, including playoff debacles one after another, they're 38-32-1 with a minus 80 point differential. There's no quarterback answer in sight because this head coach has mangled that situation time and time again. He's 0-5. I don't even feel like I need to say much more about that. But Mike Tomlin's first 3, 4, or 5 years here, it was A-plus material.